It's 88 degrees.
Programming on WILL is made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, inviting audiences to explore the newly announced 2012-2013 season, including the opening night party with La Excelencia. Tickets are on sale now. For more information, visit KrannertCenter.com.
It's 12:40 from the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. Illinois is sending 365 delegates to the national convention starting next week. The Republicans kick off Monday in Tampa, Florida. Democrats hold theirs the following week in North Carolina. Chicago public radio station WBEZ has been talking with some of the delegates, not the career politicians, but average citizens with a stake in the process. Alex Keefe has the first of two profiles.
Meet 47-year-old Gabriella Wyatt, mother, wife, and dyed-in-the-wool Republican cheerleader from the top of her head down to, well...
You know, I have some shoes, actually, that have a Republican logo and whatever.
You have Republican shoes?
Yes, I designed my own tennis shoes.
Red, white, and blue shoes, red, white, and blue scarves. Wyatt says her bags were packed days before leaving for Tampa. She was elected in the March primary to be a delegate for Mitt Romney, so she's taking time off from her job as a manager at Motorola to head to Florida with 68 other GOP delegates. Even though this is now her second convention, Wyatt says she wasn't involved in politics at all when she first came to the U.S. from Mexico in 1992. But later, she started knocking on doors in Aurora for her husband's mayoral campaign, trying to turn out Hispanic voters.
They were all great and excited until they asked me if he was a Republican or a Democrat. So when I say, oh, we're Republican, then all of a sudden, like a wall came off and, okay, I don't want to talk to you, or their attitude changed.
Since then, Wyatt has been trying to convince Hispanics the GOP tent is big enough for them, too. She concedes many Hispanics she talks to are worried about what they see as Republicans' hard line against illegal immigration. But she says President Obama had his chance to overhaul the immigration system, but instead, she says he burned his political fuel during the health care fight.
He promised the world to Hispanics when he got elected, and he has done nothing. I mean, zero.
She says immigration is important to Hispanic voters, though not as much as jobs and the economy. But for Wyatt, politics seems to be as much about the process as the policies. She starts to tear up when I ask her why it's so important that she goes to the Republican convention.
We got people dying across the world just for keep democracies, and we just stay home? I just can't.
Gabriella Wyatt says her larger goal is simply to get Hispanics to vote this November, whether for a Republican or a Democrat. I'm Alex Keefe.
And I'm Tony Arnold, covering the Democrats. Moses Garcia isn't one to sit still when it comes to politics. Not only is he going to the Democratic convention, he proudly talks of knocking on doors, getting signatures. There's just one small issue with that. He lives in DuPage County, which hasn't been all that blue in Illinois.
When you're walking in DuPage County, you have to expect that you're going to get frustrated from time to time. I mean, I've had some doors slammed in my face, you know, and some civil debates, we'll say.
That said, the 28-year-old Garcia says he's seen events for young DuPage Democrats grow in the few years he's been involved.
You'll be surprised at how many doors you knock on and people are, oh, man, there's, you know, there's Democrats here. And yeah, and there's a lot of us. You know, you're not the only one.
Garcia works as a coordinator at a water softener assembly plant in the northwest suburbs. He gives me a lift in his car to a nearby Starbucks just in the shadow of O'Hare. There are some Wu-Tang Clan CDs sitting in his car, but his radio was tuned to WBEZ. He says his parents inspired him to spend so much time on politics. Garcia's dad immigrated to the U.S. from Mexico in the early 70s, and Garcia worries about the kids of other immigrants who would qualify for paths to citizenship if Congress ever passes the DREAM Act.
A lot of the dreamers out here had no choice on when they came, and I'm afraid in the current political climate, especially if you see Romney and Ryan win this election, that they will not be awarded the same opportunities that my father had.
Garcia says a lot of his dinner table conversations growing up revolved around unions. His dad was a member of the United Steelworkers. And when Garcia sees labor losing ground in Illinois and other states like Wisconsin, it motivates him to get involved.
My dad always told me if, you know, it's easy to complain about something. He's like, but if you're going to complain, you better get out there and try to do something about it. So that's what I decided to do.
Garcia says he's happy to cheer Barack Obama on at the convention. But to him, all politics is local. He's already working on DuPage County races, even down to the contest for Forest Preserve commissioners.
Tony Arnold and Alex Keefe reporting from Chicago for Illinois Public Radio. Brian Baker is a 27-year-old tennis player from Nashville, Tennessee. He's had, well, quite the comeback season after being out of the sport for 7 years with injuries. Baker started the season ranked 458th in the world. He is now 79th after making it to Wimbledon's fourth round. Now Baker will be playing in his first U.S. Open since 2005. NPR's Ben Bergman has this profile.
As a teenager, Brian Baker was considered to be the future of American tennis.
I remember watching him play the junior final at the French Open.
Sports Illustrated's John Wertheim was there in 2003.
The stands are dotted with agents, and, you know, here's this kid, his nice-looking, big-game southerner. This is right after Andy Roddick, and everybody's sort of looking who's going to be the next tennis star, and this was it.
After turning pro, Baker upset the eighth-best player in the world at the 2005 U.S. Open. Then he dropped off the tennis map, beset by one injury after another. He had surgery on his left hip, his right hip, and then again on his left hip. There was sports hernia surgery. Then, just as he started to plot a comeback in 2008, it was back to the operating table, this time to repair his elbow with Tommy John surgery.
I never gave up hope that I couldn't come back, but I think at some point when you have five surgeries, you have to be realistic as well and know that maybe it's not in the cards, and what am I going to do with my life after tennis?
Baker pursued a finance degree at Belmont University and coached the school's tennis team. The pro tennis world quickly forgot about him. It probably didn't help that, unlike Andy Roddick, he's quiet and reserved, big on southern manners. But Baker didn't forget about pro tennis.
Confidence is a funny thing. I always knew that I hit the ball well, but body would always let me down.
Baker decided to make one last go of it last summer, entering tiny tournaments that would be the equivalent of single-A baseball. Far out of the spotlight, he started winning and climbing in the rankings, in the 700s last summer to the 400s to start this year, then 141, good enough to get a wild card into the French Open to face the overwhelming favorite, Xavier Malisse. Baker won in straight sets.
Brian Baker writing a terrific story here in Paris.
A lot of people jumping on that bandwagon.
The wagon rode right on to Wimbledon, where Baker had to win three qualifying matches just to make it to the first round. He wasn't about to squander his opportunity on the biggest stage in tennis.
And set and match, Baker.
The comeback kid from Nashville, Tennessee, is into the second week of Wimbledon on his debut.
Comeback kid, Cinderella man, take your pick. Reaching the fourth round of Wimbledon showed even the most hardened of skeptics that Baker was back. Once again, John Wertheim.
As the story has progressed, he's made a lot of believers. People in a very short time have gone from, oh, this is sort of a cute story, I wish him well, to, wait a second, this is unbelievable.
And no one finds the story more unbelievable than Baker himself, who has never been one to jump up and down.
I was super excited, but I still haven't quite, I guess. It's still been a whirlwind where I haven't sat down and been like, wow, you know, I've really done some cool things this past year, and I'm sure in the off season I'll be able to look at it more and just be amazed that I've been able to come so far in 1 year's time.
But first, back to the U.S. Open after 7 years away. Baker faces the Czech Republic's Jan Hajek in the first round. For a change, the soft-spoken Tennessean is favored to win. Ben Bergman, NPR News.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Subaru of Champaign County, featuring the Subaru Impreza, with standard all-wheel drive and an EPA highway rating of 36 mpg, depending on conditions. More information is available at SubaruofChampaign.com or at their location on Route 45 in Savoy.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 24th of August, 2012. It's the birthday of the writer Jorge Luis Borges, born in Buenos Aires in 1899. In 1955, at about the same time that he lost his sight, Borges was appointed director of Argentina's National Public Library. Borges said, "Little by little, I came to realize the strange irony of events. I had always imagined paradise as a kind of library. Others think of a garden or of a palace. There I was, the center, in a way, of 900,000 books in various languages, but I found I could barely make out the title pages and the spines." and I wrote the poem of the gifts, which begins, "No one should read self-pity or reproach into this statement of the majesty of God, who with such splendid irony granted me books and blindness at one touch." After he went blind, Borges turned from writing prose fiction to formal poetry, dictated his writing to his mother, who worked as his personal secretary. It's the birthday of the poet Robert Herrick, born London, 1591, grew up poor in a large family, became a clergyman, hung out in taverns in London, and when he was 39, left his taverns behind him and became a vicar in a little village in Devon, where he lived for more than 30 years. Robert Herrick, who wrote more than 2,500 poems, including To the Virgins, To Make Much of Time, which begins, "Gather ye rosebuds while ye may, old time," is still a-flying, and this same flower that smiles today, tomorrow will be dying. And it was on this day in the year 410 that Rome was sacked by the Visigoths, led by a man named Alaric. They came from what is now Germany. They had suffered at the hands of the Roman Empire, suffered under the burden of Roman taxes, and they started moving toward Rome. They began a siege of the city. The Romans tried to pay them off, but they didn't offer enough gold and silver, and the Visigoths sacked the city, which the historian Edward Gibbon called the greatest and most awful scene in the history of mankind. Here's a poem by Jim Harrison entitled Debtors. They used to say we're living on borrowed time, but even when young, I wondered who loaned it to us. In 1948, one grandpa died, stretched tight in a misty oxygen tent. His four sons gathered, his papery hand grasping mine. Only a week before, we were fishing. Now the four sons have all run out of borrowed time, while I'm alive, wondering whom I owe for this indisputable gift of existence. Of course, time is running out. It always has been a creek heading east, the freight of water with its surprising heaviness following the slant of the land, its destiny. What is lovelier than a creek or riverine thicket? Say it is an unknown benefactor.